Good afternoon, everybody. This is Christy Hutcherson on the front lines and in the fight every day for you, the American people. Thank you so much for joining me again on this Sunday edition of On the Front Lines. From 1 to 2 p.m. every single Sunday, you are getting hard-hitting, not only journalism, which is lost in America today, but truth. Truth is something that is very valuable in today's media, because unfortunately, even the mainstream media doesn't bring you the hard-hitting truth. I just got back from being on the front lines at the border, and we are going to have a border special coming up next Sunday. That is next Sunday, the first weekend in June, the first Sunday in June. We're going to have a hard-hitting border special that you are not going to want to miss. We have broke some serious news on the border. America, we are under fire. We are under attack. And make no mistake, this is an invasion. But today's guest knows something about being on the offensive and really defending, unfortunately, her son, who was a brave, brave military soldier who fought in Afghanistan, but came back to the streets of New York City in Harlem, where he was brutally slain by four individuals. And the Attorney General now, Bragg, in 2018, has not given this young man justice. So before we bring in Madeline Brahm, it'll just be a minute. I have a couple announcements to make as far as some of our sponsors. I absolutely love Mike Lindell. Mike Lindell is a patriot. He's been on the front lines for a very long time, fighting for election integrity and security. He's gotten a lot of flack and heat, and the woke media and the woke crowd have tried to shut him down and bankrupt his corporation. But he will prevail because Christians and listeners like you support companies who actually believe in the American dream in this country. So MyPillow, I can tell you right now, I've been a MyPillow fan for over 10 plus years. I own MyPillows way before I started advocating for Mike Lindell and MyPillow products, but they work and they're fantastic. I get great night's sleep with MyPillow, and the new pillow, My 2.0, you have to get a hold of. Actually, Madeline and I were talking off camera here, and she's going to talk to you. Ironically, she just bought a MyPillow, but it was the body pillow. So I'm going to let her talk about that and her experience. Go to promo code MyPillow.com, promo code WFFA. That's promo code WFFA. You will get a discount, and you'll be supporting this broadcast. Also, Bridie on TV. Go to the Bridie on TV store, and again, use promo code WFFA. And my new affiliate where I am an ambassador for, I absolutely love this company. And that is My Patriot Mobile. I have spent weeks now with this amazing company. Glenn, who is the owner, he's an incredible Christian. They have four incredible pillars that they give back to: pro-choice, the First and Second Amendment, and the military personnel, in the tune of over $2.5 million a year in charitable donations made possible by those who literally want to make the switch off the big companies like AT&T and Verizon. The phone system, literally, the cell service is just like Verizon, just like AT&T. So if you're happy with them, why don't you make the switch to where the real patriots and the freedom fighters make their phone calls? And that's with Patriot Mobile. Go to patriotmobile.com. Use promo code WFFA. That's patriotmobile.com/WFFA. You will get free activation by using WFFA as your promo code. I promise you, you will not regret it. And won't it make you feel good to put money in the pockets of a company that you're supporting military first responders, the First and Second Amendment, and pro-choice? I think so. Make the switch. It's a mind shift, right? We have to start putting our money where our mouth is and where our hearts and freedom are. So please look for companies that we're going to be supporting. We've vetted them for you. We've done the hard work and the labor for you. We're letting you know these are incredible companies who love this country, love America, and you're supporting a good cause. Now, without further ado, I'd like to bring on my first guest. She is a warrior woman. She's a woman fighting not just for America, for the beliefs that we stand in, but she's fighting for the memory of her son. So Madeline, I want you to just get into this. First and foremost, I am deeply, deeply sorry for your loss. I cannot imagine. I have two sons myself. They're both 23. My one son served in the United States Air Force. Mm-hmm. I cannot imagine what it's like to wake up every day and not have your son's voice or to be able to kiss him or hug him and say goodbye. It's gut-wrenching. No mother ever or family member or parent should ever go through what you went through. So please tell the audience a little about your son, first and foremost, his character, who he was, what he loved to do. I believe that he still lives on. I'm a Christian, and I know that he's in a better place with Jesus, but it doesn't make it any better without the loss here.
Well, thank you so, so much for having me. my son, Sergeant Hassan Correa, wasn't always Sergeant Hassan Correa. He, fine young man, quiet, homebody. Hassan, when he went shopping, he would buy the same pair of Levi's jeans and black t-shirts and white Air Force, I think the Air Force One sneakers. We call them uptowns here in the city. His whole closet was full of nothing but Levi jeans, black t-shirts, and white ups. And that was Hassan. He was clean cut. He was plain. He was simple. Decent young man. He worked hard. And he loved to play Guitar Hero. His favorite song on Guitar Hero was Sweet Child of Mine by Guns N' Roses. And he would play that thing and he would stay in the room for hours, weeks, months, playing Guitar Hero. And I would walk by and you couldn't tell me that the Guns N' Roses band was not in that bedroom playing that song. You know, he perfected it. And I have that actually inscribed on the back of the dog tag I had made for Hassan, his fingerprint. That's Hassan's fingerprint.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And on the back is inscribed, sweet child of mine,
oh, I
sweet
love
of mine. Yeah. So that was his favorite, or, you know, what I remember the most about him. But Hassan went to the Army when he was 25 years old. So he was a late bloomer. He wanted to stay up underneath his mama. As long as he could, you know?
And
he just made a decision one day. He worked at Abercrombie and Fitch overnight, folding the t-shirts. He worked, you know, the t-shirt tables, making it nice for the next morning. And he did that for years. And you never heard a peep out of Hassan, only when it was time for him to come out to eat. You know, he didn't bother nobody. But one day he came home and said, Mom, I'm going to the Army. Mm. I'm very proud of Hassan for the decision that he made. It wasn't forced. You know, he had no other reason to go other than after 9/11 happened. he felt that he needed to do something to be a part of something bigger and better than himself. And he wanted to do something to give back. Also, because it's just a tradition in my family since the Buffalo Soldiers, the 10th Mountain Division, every male in my family has been in the military. Yes. Oh. And all of the women are married to military men, except for me. I'm the only one who didn't marry military. But all my sisters are military wives and all that. You know, so we go back a long way. So it's a family tradition and a family, you know, custom because we believe in patriotism. We believe in United States of America. We have good, strong, conservative values. You know, we believe in God and family and country. And we were raised that way. My mom raised us that way. We believe in, if you want to eat, you work, you know, you don't lay around and you don't depend on someone to give you anything. You know, when you're able-bodied and you're healthy, you need to get up and go and make it happen for yourself, you know, so nobody can own you. You know, we talk about slavery.
I love that. That's right. You know, I've said this for a very long time. Yeah. You know, I think, you know, the Democrats, and for me, this is not political for me. It's about the Constitution and our founding principles of this great land, freedom, liberty, and the right to work and have those freedoms, right? But I think about how they've subverted they take away history, right? The Democratic Party flat out is the party of the slavery party, period. It's history, it's facts.
It
they try to erase it and turn it around that it's the conservatives and the Republicans, but in reality, it's not. And if you look at the welfare system, you know, and especially there's a lot of impoverished areas, and especially in the inner cities, and it's all about keeping the underprivileged down and under slavery. And I was
looking
in poverty, because if you're in poverty and you're beholden to Big Daddy government, you're a slave to Big Daddy government and to what they want you to do and how they want you to vote. Everything stems from that. So you're right. I'm so glad you brought
that
up.
You talk about a knee on the neck, George Floyd and a knee on the neck. You know, the government, people who are dependent on the government has their knee right on generations of people's necks. You know, I talk about this all the time. You know, we have rich men and women in suits that are telling poor people that the best you could do is welfare. Telling you and fighting for especially people in the black and brown community to stay on the plantation, all right, and continue to live in poverty while they continue to be rich. You know, when they pass with Kevin McCarthy, you know, I was watching about, you know, some of the proposals that he added to this bill. He wants to put the welfare to work provision in there. You know, we had that back in the 90s with Bill Clinton, and it worked. It was very successful. And it's something that needs to happen again. You know, people need to get up off the couch, off their behind, and go to work, okay? Because at 60, 61 years old, I still get up every day and go to work. You know, as tired as I am, I still go. And if I can do it, everybody should be able to do it. You know,
they have a culture, but they've bred this culture in the younger generation that they, first and foremost, that they deserve to be taken care of. They deserve, you know, it's an entitlement mentality. I think our generation is probably that last generation. There's very few and far between. Yeah. No, I'm really blessed because I had a firm hand and a Bible in the other with my boys, and we've taught them hard work and ethics that you don't get anywhere in life without hard work. Nothing worth having comes free. You have to work for it. But this next generation, I'm really, really concerned. And, you know, I think that leads into what happened to your son a little bit too, because they just want to take.
They including life, including someone else's life, you know, and don't expect there to be any accountability or no consequences for it. You know, this is a family of homicidal maniacs, two brothers, a sister, and their friend who attacked and butchered my son. These were not children. These people are from between the ages of 37 and 40 years old. So these adults are adults. You know, the two brothers, James and Christopher Saunders, Travis Stewart, you know, career criminals, repeat predicate, violent felony offenders. Christopher was actually out on parole at the time for attempted murder on a police officer, right? So he had just got finished doing 5 years, and he hadn't even been home for 2 years yet before he, you know, participated in the murder of my son. So here we have someone who had no business even being out, period. You know, this guy is capable of killing someone. And James, the same thing, you know, in and out of prison since he's a little boy for stabbing people. So, Hassan was visiting his dad one night in Harlem. And there was an altercation earlier in the evening from a gentleman who was sitting on a stoop. He was drunk, okay? And Hassan and his father were standing in the lobby of the building, and the guy busted through the door and punched Hassan's father in the face, right? For nothing, no reason. Didn't even know either one of them. So Hassan beat him up. to make a long story really short, right? Hassan beat him up, and the guy went back and got told Mary Saunders that my son and his father jumped him for no reason. So Mary went and got her brothers and Travis and a whole nother gang of people that came to the door where my son and his father were, banging on the door twice, not once, but twice, telling them to come outside to fight, right? So my son's father went out to talk to James, to explain to him what happened. And this is all on video, all right? Even the fight that happened in the lobby, you know, so there's no disputing anything that happened. You know, I don't know what James said, but Hassan punched him in the face, right? I don't know if he threatened, because there's no audio, it's just a video, right? Mm-hmm. So you can't hear what's being said. And when Hassan did that, his father was hit in the head with a bottle and knocked unconscious. And then they, all four of them, jumped on Hassan. And when James got up, he got up with the knife. And he tried to run, and Mary chased him into the street and held him by his waist while she's punching him. And Christopher and James and Travis are also kicking, punching, stomping, and James is stabbing. All right. Sam was fighting for his life. He had no defense. It was four with a knife against one with his hands. And they had no mercy on him. None. All right. Sam was stabbed 9 times. Each stab wound was 4 to 6 inches deep, you know, according to the coroner, that actually went through bone. So this is how hard James, you know, his intent was to kill. Hassan was stabbed through every major organ in his body. He ultimately died from the stab wound to his heart. Hassan's father was also stabbed 12 times by James. When he regained conscious, he came to the middle of the street and tried to intervene and help Hassan. And they turned on him. The men, James, Christopher, and Travis, and they kicked, punched, and stomped. And James stabbed him 12 times. The only thing that saved his life is because he's 6'5". And James just missed his heart because he got stabbed in the same organs that Hassan did. But because of Hassan's father's height, he really couldn't penetrate the way he penetrated Hassan, because him and Hassan stood toe to toe, you know, and plus Hassan was being held from behind while James was stabbing him all over his body.
And there were no bystanders?
None that would intervene. None that would intervene.
How long did it take for the police officers to arrive at the scene?
According to the testimony, because it was a trial for one of the defendants, Christopher, he decided he wanted to take the case to trial because he felt he could beat it, you know, because he wasn't the one with the knife, you know. According to the detectives, according to a few eyewitness testimonies, and also according to EMS, it took about 15 minutes for the police to get there. Mm. Now, this is at the same precinct. Remember the two officers that were killed last summer in Harlem, where they went into the building and they were, the man shot through the door and killed both of them right there in the hallway of the house? Okay, it's the same precinct, which is right around the corner, literally right around the corner from where this incident took place. And it took them 15 minutes to get there. So Hassan, his body dropped into the gutter. That's on video. And then Hassan's father comes over and he tries, you can see he had on a white t-shirt, and you can see the stab wounds all over his white t-shirt as he's stumbling to try to come and see about his boy. And he tried to grab him by the back of his pants, like, get up, get up. Son was dead, you know, and then his father also died right there as well. But EMS was able to revive him, you know. But he was in a coma for like a month. You know, they had to operate on every major organ in his body, you know, but they saved his life. But Hassan, the coroner said, medical examiner said that any one of those wounds that Hassan sustained could have killed him. You know, he would have bled to death. But it was the stab to the heart that they determined cause of death. So tragic.
So walk us through Bragg. So enters Bragg, and why, what type of justice
none
have you received for your son?
I'm so angry, you know, because this happened in 2018, mm-hmm. okay? And this was before Bragg took office. So we had Cyrus Vance, who was the district attorney, and we had some real professional veteran ADAs that were handling this case, all right? They prepared, protected, and built a strong trial-ready murder case against all four of these defendants for first-degree gang assault and second-degree murder. No plea deals, no bargains, no, you know, nothing. Just straight to trial. Until Bragg came into office in 2020. Or was it 2021? I don't remember. Because remember, we had a year off because of COVID. All right. So that kind of threw everything off. All right. But once COVID was over, you know, he was in office. And the two veteran ADAs who originally were handling the case, they quit, along with hundreds of other ADAs quit, you know, after he put out that day one memo and said that he was not going to prosecute crime. So a lot of the real professionals left. Okay. So now I'm stuck with this restorative justice ADA Daphne Uran, who completely mishandled the entire case. It completely unraveled, you know. She made it so that Mary and Travis had their gang assault and murder indictments completely dismissed because she claimed she could not prove intent. Now, for 4 years, you know, three or four judges have seen this video and have all said this is a brutal, heinous, you know, crime, and that there are no plea deals, there are no anything. We're going straight to trial with this, all right?
Well, the intent to harm was there from the beginning. The moment she went and got her other brother, she made a conscious decision.
Exactly.
To go get the other brothers to then go to your son's and your husband's house.
Didn't so even know intent. That. How would she know? How would she know that it was my son and his father who had the fight with Gene Cruz in the lobby? There was no one in the lobby. If the camera didn't see it, no one would have saw it. She's going on what Gene Cruz said, that they jumped him. Yes, they did jump him, but after he punched Hassan's father in the face for no reason.
They were defending
him. Hassan was defending his father. Yeah. So that's the defense that they used. That they were defending themselves against Hassan.
Madeline, what do you think the reasoning is why Bragg would do the things that he's directing the assistant, the ADs to do in New York City? Well, why do you think he's so pro crime?
Listen, there was a whole lot of money going around, billions. You know, I hear this name George Soros a lot. You know, I did some reading about him, you know, and he's along the restorative justice, the social justice line, okay? And he doesn't believe that people, you know, belong in jail. And he has this theory, okay? He has this theory that if you treat criminals nice, okay, that it will somehow miraculously, you know, stop them from committing crime. All right. So a whole bunch of money was thrown around to all the district attorneys in all the big cities across America. And the same thing is happening from San Francisco to New York. All right. So in every other major city in between. All right. All of these district attorneys are paid off. All right. They took that money. They took the money, all right, and as a result of it, on top of the bail reform, raise the age, less is more, now elder parole, now all these different criminal justice reform policies that are doing nothing, all right, but causing my community to self-decimate, all right, and for our young people doing nothing but creating a whole new generation of career criminals and mass incarceration, if they survive it, okay? Because there's only three things that can happen: jails, institutions, or death, and that's it, right? And it seems like it's being done at this point intentionally, right? They defunded the police. We have a whole New York City council that is all progressive, and they all believe in this crap, this nonsense that they're doing. Then we have Albany. They're all, you know, progressives and social justice warriors, and they're pushing more policy. This elder parole. They want to let murderers out now, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Because they feel sorry because they got old. Well, they're supposed to get old. They're supposed to die in prison. All right, the people they killed don't get a second chance at life. Why should they get a second chance at life? You know, at least they're still alive. They're living and breathing. They're still above ground. But they want to go even further. And then, you know, and it's not that people voted for this because people did not vote for it. They lied. They lied about what these policies were actually supposed to do.
Well, Madeline, what they love to do, the lawmakers, they wrap things up in pretty little packages and labels. They sound really good. Justice reform, equality, equity. Yeah. Those are Marxist terms, by the way. People need to understand that this is a Marxist ideology. This is a communistic ideology. Mm-hmm. And I do believe you're 100% right. This is intentional. It's part of an actual, I believe, a bigger plan, and that's the complete destabilization of America and to erode and get rid of the Constitution of the United States. Mm-hmm. When you let criminals run free on the streets, and the victims are the criminals now, and the criminals are the victims.
Exactly.
And so when you have that society, the society is going to literally implode from within. And that's what their overall arching goal is. George Soros, I agree with you. He has funded all these DAs. And I was laughing when Bragg came out and said, I didn't get money from Soros. Well, that's not true at all. And he knows he's lying about that. Mm-hmm. All of the DAs, he funds many of these politicians and DAs and judges and things like that. And he typically gets a hold of most of them prior to them running for office. That's how they do it. I've been following this for a very long time and researching how the bribes and the payoffs happen to our politicians and judges and lawmakers. So we have to, as the American citizens like yourself, you know, it is up to us, I believe, to take back this country. And, you know, I love the fact, I loved your speech on Capitol Hill. I was listening to you and it was riveting, and you stood your ground. You know, the Democrats were trying to just go after you and discredit you. Tell us a little bit about that day and what sparked the fiery exchange that you gave.
Well, you know, it started off with Jerry Nadler.
Mm.
When he made a comment after I shared my story, because, you know, they go around, the Democrats are all on this side of the table, the Republicans are all on this side of the table, Jim Jordan is in the middle, right? So the Democrats went first after each one of us gave our 5-minute testimony, and Jerry Nadler rambling on and on that this is nothing but a stage, this, because of Trump and this, and that. You know, trying to discredit all of the victim testimony, all right? These are real victims sitting here, all right? High profile victims. Everyone has heard the story. And he's still trying to say that, like, we were paid actors and we were being used. Jim Jordan and the Republicans were using us. But what really set me off is when Nadler said that what Ms. Brame is failing to tell you is that two of the people got life in prison for killing her son, right? So I interjected. I grabbed the mic. I said, excuse me, Mr. Nadler, four people were involved in my son's murder, not two. All four of them should be in prison for the rest of their lives. You know, how dare they sit there and try to discredit? So it went around the whole side of the table. And when it got to Goldman, that's really when I just couldn't take it anymore, because they were all parroting the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's all staged, it's all set up, they're all here, they're Trump operatives, and they're this and that and the third. You know, and that's when Goldman, you know, tried to say that we were clowns or something like that. This was a circus or something. You know, and that's when I just couldn't take it anymore. I just couldn't take any more of it, you know, and I said, excuse me, don't try to insult my intelligence. I know exactly what you're saying or what you're trying to say, you know, and I let him know. It's one of the reasons why I left the plantation of the Democratic Party. You know, 40 year, loyal, voting Democrat, even though I'm raised in a conservative household, conservative Republican household, but because that's what everybody else was doing, voting Democrat, I voted Democrat. Don't ask me why, I just did. Because that's what everyone was doing. Until 2020, when Trump ran for that second term, and I was listening to him, I said, wait a minute now. They're telling us not to like this man. They're telling us that he's a racist. They're telling us that he's a white supremacist, and the Patriots, a Tea Party, far left, I mean far right, you know, crazy, Looney Tunes, all kinds of stuff we heard. Right? Until I really started to listen. I said, he's telling the doggone truth. Wait a minute now. No matter how it comes out or how it sounds, he's telling the truth. So that's when I changed my party affiliation from a Democrat to conservative.
And well, that's what they want to do. That's what they've done. They put out a bunch of lies and propaganda.
Yes.
And then they don't want you to listen and learn for yourself. They want to feed you what they want you to know, so you can stay under their thumb and control. You know, the Black community, I you know, my heart goes out because there's so much opportunity out there. And if you're just told and given a coaching in love and truth, it would change the trajectory, I believe wholeheartedly. You can be anything you want to be. You just have to believe in yourself. And but they want to say you can't.
Let me tell you something. I'm from the hood, okay? And I'm going to tell you, it's a lifestyle. It's a culture. It's a mindset. It's a behavior. It's an attitude that's influenced, okay, a lot by music, fashion, social media, okay? The little 10 seconds of fame on a TikTok video, all right? All this stuff is influenced by something. I come from the same environment. I'm not gonna say that I didn't have my day and I didn't do all the things that I thought that I was big and bad enough to do, all right? But I did not learn any of it inside the house, right? My mother was a reverend, a pastor all my life, all right? And all she did was preach the Bible, right? And anything that I did when I was old enough to go outside and do it without her finding out about it, okay? I've done it all. Done it all, experienced it all, experimented with it all, even jail, all right? So it's a choice that people make. It's a choice. We all have the same opportunities. And I think the worst thing we could do is lower the bar and lower the expectations for Black and brown people in the community. That's why they play on that. You know, it's the whole mindset of getting over, right? They can sit home and don't do nothing, don't have to respect the police, kids don't have to listen to the teachers, because they're getting over. And now we have policies in place that make it legal to do it. So now it's really going to self-decimate. It's not that my people don't know no better. They know better. It's easier.
It says that in the Bible. There's no consequences.
It says that in the Bible. It's easier to do what's wrong.
Yeah.
You know, especially if all you got to do is sit home and wait for a check. Do everything that's wrong and still get a check every month. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, my dad used to tell me, you know, idle hands is not a good thing. You need to be busy all the time. You know,
we can, you know, love our neighbor just like Jesus loves. All right. But we need tough love. We don't need none of this coddling stuff.
Discipline.
We need a Rudy Giuliani back in there. We need a George Pataki back in there. We need a Donald Trump back in there. All right. To put the foot down, all right, and restore law and order and civility, regardless of who likes it. But I'm telling you, for the most part, black and brown people have walked away from the plantation of the Democratic Party, all right? You're going to see in this next election, in 24, you're going to see a complete shift, all right? It's going to blow some minds. They don't come right out and say it. Because they're afraid of losing their black card or somebody calling them, a coon or a Uncle Tom. But when they get in that voting booth, they're voting for Trump. You can believe that. Some of us are bold enough to come right out and say it. But for the most part, we are walking away from that. You know, this hardworking, tax-paying, law-abiding, citizens, not just black. I'm talking about poor. White people, brown people, black people, yellow people, red people, anybody who's poor, okay, are waking up and we're seeing what time it really is. Now they're letting all these illegals in here. All right?
Yes, New York City is flooded. I mean, New York City.
Who do you think is going to pay for them people?
We are.
Who do you think?
The taxpayer.
And we can't even afford to buy food. I work every single day. I have to make a decision if I'm going to buy food or pay rent. What's most important for me? My roof over my head. So I have to make that decision every single month.
Yeah, the illegals right now, because I spent, I'm an expert in this this invasion into our country from these illegals, and we don't have anybody right now with a backbone anywhere. Even the governors, they're band-aiding. I call it political band-aiding. Congress, they're not acting, and they could act. This is a national security. This isn't immigration anymore. This is an actual active national security threat to the United States of America. And underneath those threats, they can actually shut down the border and deport every single person trying to enter this country illegally. I believe that the governors need to, instead of shipping them to New York and all over the country and trafficking them, they need to be met with law enforcement. They need to be slapped with trespassing illegally into the United States and into the state that they've trespassed in. And then they need to be deported, because you cannot be a citizen if you have an arrest record. So therefore, I believe that's why Biden now is trying to have everybody processed in Mexico, because he's trying to get around everything and then make the numbers look like they're smaller, when in fact, they're even more. We have terrorists, rapists, pedophiles, murderers. Look at New York City. I was in New York City a couple months ago. It doesn't even look like it used to look. It's filthy. It's disgusting.
It's trash. It's trash. I work in Midtown. I work in Midtown. I go there every day. It's disgusting.
There's feces in the street. I mean, they're drinking and they're given $1,000 free brand new tennis shoes, free phones, food, clothing. They're given housing and hotels. We don't even take care of our veterans. Our veterans are committing suicide. Our veterans are dying. Our veterans don't even get the health care that they need, while we're giving over almost $4 billion right now so far to illegals who don't even belong in this country. Nope. This is craziness in America right now. And so, Madeline, I would love to know, what's next for you? And really quick, before we move on to that question, Jim Jordan, did you get a chance to meet with Jim Jordan?
And well, I spoke with him briefly.
And what was his thoughts?
Well, actually, it was after the hearing was over. I actually spoke through his
one of his aides.
Through his aides, and they were very grateful. They thanked me for my participation and for my testimony, and that it's not over. You know, there's more to come. They weren't specific, you know, but there is more to come. I noticed that, you know, one of the things that I asked for in that hearing was to stop pulling the funding, all right, from any prosecutor who is not prosecuting crime. Any federal dollar, right, that's being funneled into those prosecutors' office, all right, that's supposed to be used to prosecute crime, they need to pull that funding until they start prosecuting crime. So from what I understand, you know, that's one of the things that they're scrambling around for. They're scrambling because I think there might be talk of, you know, pulling funding.
Yeah, Congress controls the purse. I mean, McCarthy right now, I'm actually really disappointed in Kevin McCarthy.
Yeah.
The deal that he's striking right now is a deal with the devil. He's not being beholden to the conservatives and to getting this country fiscally on track. Mm-hmm. I'm very disappointed in him. I sure hope there are. I was looking at the list of some of the brave Republicans who are standing up to vote no, and I hope to God that there's not a deal. If the government shuts down, the government shuts down for a little bit until we come to a more fiscal responsibility. And I hope inside there is right. We have to with our wallets, right? And it's not just from the federal funding, Madeline. It's our personal individual responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
How and where we shop is extremely important, I believe. We're either going to fund the demise of our nation or we're going to fund the Constitution and freedom and liberty of our country and taking it back. I don't shop anymore. I don't shop at Walmart, Target. It's difficult, right? Especially when you're on a budget. But these companies, these woke companies, they're literally destroying the very fabric of our nation. AT&T, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, I could go Starbucks, you know, all of these companies are not really good companies. So we need to actually take our wallets as private citizens and buy and try to do the best we can when we can to not buy with companies that are just crumbling the fabric of our nation.
And, you know, I think that's key right there. You know, we need to follow the money. Right. We need to go after it with our pocketbook. Right. We need to use common sense. And when we vote for candidates that have a history and a record of being better stewards with our money. All right. Who are more fiscally responsible are on the conservative side. OK, and who have shown a history of, you know, showing us some measurable outcomes of effectiveness of what is actually happening with our tax dollars. You know, we don't see any of it. It's like, where are all these billions and trillions of doggone it dollars going? Where is it going?
Money laundered through the warmongers in the industrial military complex. Wars in Ukraine, which don't by the way, which we know for a fact, as we've been following this as well and uncovering some stuff that'll be another show that I'm going to have. But all of this money, billions of dollars in aid to Ukraine, they're not getting the equipment that they need. It's all a lie. It's a farce. But what's happening is that money's being funneled back through either NGOs or governmental contracts that are beholden or somehow related to or associated with somebody in office, Kamala Harris, the Bidens, et cetera. Look at Pay for Play for China. They're bought out, they're sold out. It's money laundering at its best. And then the American people suffer. The everyday average American person suffers because we're over $37+ trillion in debt because they don't have a spending problem. They have a stealing problem.
Yeah, they're thieves. They're corrupt. You know, it's no different than right here in New York City. The most corrupt, you know, system that we have. The entire apparatus needs to be dismantled. These people need to be voted out, period. All right. And I think that, you know, more and more every single day, New Yorkers are beginning to wake up to that reality. All right. And they're becoming, even people who are staunch supporters of them, right, are saying that, wait a minute, something is wrong here. But our problem here in New York on the ground is we don't really have any viable candidates to run against these people. You know?
What about yourself?
People keep saying that, but I live in a district where it's already Republican, right? And they just got their seats.
Well, we just got to move you then out of that
district, don't we? I just moved here. Wait a minute. I've been praying for this apartment.
We might know people, Madeline, to help you do that. I might know some people to help you do that, Madeline. I think you should take on AOC. I love the fact that they beat the crap out of her.
Oh, I was thinking about that today. I was actually Googling it on my way home.
There's a divine, right? I'm a Christian. You're a Christian. There's a divine confirmation. We've never talked about that.
I would chew her up and spit her out.
Do it, girl. We need to take her out. AOC is, she is a boil. She's actually handpicked by none other than George Soros and his Democratic Justice Society that groomed her. They, Tlaib, her, Ilhan Omar, they're all been groomed by the Soros-funded foundation. So we need to target these districts 100%.
Let me ask you,
with New York City, when New York City, and the people that you know in the community that you love and live in, would they be receptive to somebody coming in like myself and our team who've spoke all over the nation, who are literally giving actionable items and training on how to take back this country and your community?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely, they would.
You know, we're launching a tour called Action Across America. And it's that very thing. Enough talk. It's time to train, equip, mobilize, and take action for this solution. And I love that you're an action kind of lady. I love a woman like you who's fighting for your son's memory, who's fighting for justice for the voiceless, those individuals who can't any longer speak for themselves. And you know, I was reading some of your information on the Give Send Go fund that you're trying to raise. You know, you're a true advocate. You're a voice to help those in the system who don't know how to navigate the system because the system's not fair. So can you, in the last 5 minutes, we have about 4 or 5 minutes left. First and foremost, can you tell people where to go to help support this project of yours? And then I'm going to stay in touch with you and we're going to talk about coming to New York and we're going to talk about you taking over AOC's position.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. So everybody can go to my GoFundMe page. It's called Voice for the Voiceless by Madeline Brain. What I'm asking is for support from the public to help me continue my crime victim advocacy work that I've been doing for the past 5 years, strictly on a voluntary basis. You know, I work every day and the money comes from out of my pocket. People have donated, you know, over the years, but those were for specific things like helping me get my apartment, which I'm blessed with. You know, I've been here for 5 months, but now I have three mothers of homicide victims that I'm currently working with very closely and helping them navigate the court, you know, system, the criminal court system, because that's one of the hardest things that they will ever have to do on top of their child being dead. All right. They have to fight with the system now to try to get justice. And it takes years. You know, so I make myself accessible to them. I go into court with them when I can. All right. And even, you know, the money will help me, even if, you know, they really need me. I can, you know, sort of like not lose a day's pay because I have some money where I can, you know, make up for the day, and I'll go and sit in court with them and maybe buy them lunch or something like that. You know, I'm not asking for a lot. I'm just asking for something to help sustain what I've started, because I cannot no longer afford to volunteer to do it anymore. I have three moms that, you know, went through the very same thing that I just went through. And believe me, it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking, you know, but I have to stay strong for them. And also it's very healing for me. You know, I make myself available any time of day or night, you know, just for emotional support, you know, just a text message, you know, or if they can't sleep or whatever, you know. And this is a hard thing that we have to do. And there's not a lot of people in America, all right, who actually do this work that I'm doing. Not at the level that I'm doing it. This is real grassroots. This is real nitty gritty. This is real down and dirty. This is real hands on. In there, you know, going with moms who identify bodies, all kinds of stuff. You know,
well, you know, Madeline, you're the perfect example of what Christ tells us to do, right? We're supposed to walk out, you know, through tragedy. God will take beauty for it and take it into access for beauty. And, you know, I America out there, you know, this takes a lot of money. It does. At the end of the day, the left is well funded. They are. They fund their evil programs. You know, for Madeline to do what she does, Voice for the Voiceless, to go be with a mom or a dad who's lost their child in the most horrific way, I can't even imagine. To be able to give a little bit of money so Madeline can be freed up, that she doesn't have to worry about if her lights are on or if there's a roof over her head, if there's food in the pantry. If we can give to help Madeline be a strong support and somebody who they can rely on to help navigate through the worst tragedy of they'll ever face in their life. So please go to Voice for the Voiceless and give, give, give. You know, Christy Hutcherson on the front lines, when I'm out there, you know, we fund this ourselves for the most part because we believe in this nation. We believe in this country. Mm-hmm. And if not us, then who? But we're all in this together. We all need to partner to fund the things that are going to make a difference in this nation. Madeline, thank you so much for telling your son's story. Thank you for being brave. Thank you for standing up and speaking out and being fearless. You're a fearless warrior. I respect the heck out of that. I'm going to do whatever I can. We're going to talk. Give me a couple days. You and I are going to talk. I'm going to have Julie reach out to you or Kristen. Okay. And we're going to discuss coming to New York very, very soon. And we're going to discuss New York City out there. Everybody listening, supporting. Look for her campaign. We're going to get her into AOC's district. And we are going to replace the communist AOC. So thank you so much, Madeline. God bless you. And I look forward to working with you in the future.
God bless you. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you guys so much. This has been an incredible episode. It's been sobering. I cannot imagine to lose my son in the way that she lost her son. Any child's death is tragic, but to have to live it again and again and again because there's no justice because of Soros-funded district attorneys like Bragg and attorneys who are turning the criminals out on the street every single day. We see it on TV. We see it in the news. The criminals are running free and the victims are victimized again and again and again. Somehow we're the criminals. America, we can no longer stand for this type of injustice. The answer lies in your hands. What are you going to do about it? You have to engage. That's what you need to do. I'm here to announce today the Action Across America Tour. Action Across America Tour. We will be putting up our landing page by Monday. I think it's by Friday of next week. We will have the tour page up. You'll be able to purchase tickets. It is an intensive one-day training course. This is not a rally. This is not a cheerleading session. This is not a bunch of speakers coming together. This is real, true training in action, giving you the tools that you need to geofence your community, to protect your community, your home, and to be in like-minded community with others, to have a plan, have leadership, and to take back this country. We are going to be coming to cities all over the Northeast and then taking it by the grace of God and by your generous, generous sponsorships and donations. We will be able to do this in every single state and numerous cities across this nation. It is important that you go to Action Across America. You can go to WFFA.win, our website, WFFA.win. Send us an email. Tell us you want tour tickets to the Action Across America event and training, one-day training. We will come to your city. We're only taking 500 to 1,000 people max on a day to train you and equip you to save this great nation in this country. And again, fight with your wallets. Stop spending your money at non-patriot companies. Go to MyPillow, use promo code WFFA. Go to My Patriot Mobile, please. /forward/WFFA, promo code WFFA. You must use that promo code. You will get free activation. Bridie on TV store, WFFA promo code. Get engaged, get involved. God bless you. And I will see you next Sunday on another episode of On the Front Lines with Christy Hutcherson.